The Listening Lab is a space for honest and intimate conversations to better understand our neighbors and ourselves, and is made possible by the Walmart Foundation. To learn more about the lab and schedule your visit, go to KUAFListeningLab.com.
Yeah, so that's what I do every morning. So that's 3 hours gone. And then in the morning, I will talk to my grandparents, both of them.
That's nice.
And that take another hour. So that's what I usually do. Like, that's what I just put in right now.
Do they
now.
Live here? Do you talk with them over the phone? Or?
They live here.
Oh, they live here. Nice.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what I do in the morning. I got taken that off in the morning.
Yeah.
And then at lunch, I will do like a pray, like a,
yeah.
like a self-study. And then I work from 1 to 6.
Where
and
do
then
you work?
Here.
Oh, this.
Yes.
This place.
Okay. Yes. So after that, I have Bible studies every day, Monday to Friday from mm-hmm. 7 to 9, I guess. So that's what I did. So
from
that's
what time?
From 7 to 9.
7 to 9, okay. Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did. That's what I scheduled for the summer. So like you could also do something like
that's
that.
That's really good. Okay, so you've got a schedule. So I'm also trying that, which is why I've started I'm shadowing a doctor and I'm also volunteering as well.
I'm volunteering too.
Yeah, and so with that I have like some schedule, and then I'm also taking a summer class starting soon.
I'm also taking a summer class. I'm taking two summer classes.
Okay, how are you doing all this? You're doing a lot. So
I went to a conference last week and yeah. I went to the embassy, meet with friends. I went to the ER a few times.
The what?
The ER.
What's ER?
The emergency room.
Oh, okay.
And I finished a class.
Wait, what'd you go to the ER for?
Complex things, different things.
Okay, sure.
I think I overworked, so I got a heart attack.
You got a heart attack?
Yeah. And I got bit by a tick because I was praying. I went for like a silent prayer. Like yeah. I went off in the woods I like saying the phrase with myself, and my grandparents always laugh at me like you're with yourself. like I just
I understand that.
I went to the woods. I went to the woods with myself, and I got bit by a tick, and I just had to go to the ER for that as well. And then just like over. I think I worked a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. Well, take care of yourself. It looks like you're doing better right now.
Thanks. So. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So yeah. So you can also do something like that. Like
music.
I don't know. Like. Music and gym and walking.
Yeah, studying, being more active, whatnot. Yeah, yeah. That does sound good.
Yeah, volunteering sounds good. I'm going to volunteer at a food pantry. And I'm also going to volunteer at a square this summer.
That sounds really nice. I like volunteering at the square and that kind of stuff. What do you volunteer at the square for?
So they have First Thursday every month. That's one opportunity every month.
Okay.
And that's what I know so far. Yeah. I will usually just do... I was going to do a lot of church stuff, but that's not what I wanted right now for this summer. I think I'm going to do more community...
I see.
Mm-hmm.
And you're graduating this coming year, or?
I graduated. I just graduated 2 weeks ago.
Okay, so you
for my master's.
Graduated. Okay.
Yes, so I'll be starting my second master's in the fall.
Second master's?
Yes. Oh my goodness. I am very academically focused.
Yes, you are.
Want to be at school at least until I'm 60. So.
What's your second master in?
It's going to be data analytics.
Data analytics?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an idea like what you're going to do in the future? I guess you want to keep studying, right? You said you want to be in school until you're 60.
I think I wanted to be an engineer.
Engineer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like an
okay
one.
An okay one. My name's Abdullah Asif. I'm currently a second year at the University of Arkansas, and I'm studying biochemistry and Arabic.
Okay. My name is Fawn. My full name is Rilin Gao. I will be starting my first semester of my second master program of the analytics. I just graduated 2 weeks ago of my first master program in industrial engineering, and I am from China.
Awesome. I guess I should mention that I'm also from, or I guess my parents were from India. Mm-hmm. I was born here. But
I know that.
I guess we'll get into this. This is Asian American, Pacific Islander. That's the whole theme of this. So, yeah.
How's your family doing?
Family's doing really well. So actually I live with them right now, and so I see them all the time. I see them every day, and so they're all doing really, really good, thankfully.
How do you feel about going home every day and feel like your mom will be cooking food? Do you know what's dinner tonight?
Yes, I do. it's an Indian dish called kofte ande. I guess it's equivalent to like meatballs, but they're like spicy, and you also have eggs in them as well. And so it's really nice going home and knowing my mom is super sweet, and she's awesome, amazing. She always cooks for us. That's one of like the things I know that I have the best for myself, because even though I'm attending university, I still live at home with my parents 30 minutes away. So I just commute back and forth home to university. And then, yeah, mom's cooking is something that I definitely try not to take for granted, because all my friends have told me like how lucky I am, while they always have to suffer with like the dining hall food and whatnot.
Well, you'll see.
Yeah, I still get my mom's wonderful cooking, so.
Will you learn them? Will you learn them?
Learn them. Oh, yes, of course. One of my goals this summer, actually, is to learn how to make a bunch of dishes and whatnot.
That's
right now,
really
like,
good.
My cooking abilities are very, very basic, but I'm going to try to learn from my mom. And so I hope to be more of a chef by the time
So my story of my mother's cooking is, my mother is the worst chef in this entire universe.
No, you can't say that. What?
So my mother, okay. So first of all, my mother doesn't believe in seasonings. She thinks that all the seasonings are actually bad for you. They're okay. Not good for your health. Yeah. So she doesn't like to put any seasonings in whatever she's cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also a very efficient person. She likes to be very efficient.
Yeah.
So whenever we are eating something, let's say we have like bread, we have like pork, mm-hmm. beef, vegetables and rice, like three dish and one main dish for dinner. She likes to mix all the ingredients into one and make them one dish and we'll just eat that one dish.
Just like mix everything all together.
Yes. And I see. Imagine, so it would be like that, but without any seasonings.
Without any seasoning.
Yes. She also cooks everything. So she even cooks like actual bananas and apples before she would eat them.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't like to eat anything raw. So that's why I said, whoa. My mom.
Did, I guess she come from like were her parents also like that, and I guess it's kind of like tradition, or
I actually didn't know, but she does have really good skin.
Yeah.
So
maybe there's like health benefits behind this. What did your dad, what does your dad think of whenever your mom cooks like that?
He runs away. He will never have breakfast at home.
Yeah.
He will somehow have dinner and he will have very little.
Yeah.
And I'll be the one who's taking care of, who's responsible for eating all of it.
Oh my goodness, wow. So
yeah.
I guess you learned to not be picky with food, maybe. Is there any silver lining to this? Or?
I think that actually made me more picky about food.
More picky about food.
I actually really like the Pakistan food that I had in all your events, actually.
No, oh, really? Really? Okay, awesome. Yeah, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
We did put a lot of work into that.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad. I actually searched up, I was trying to look up Mediterranean places mm-hmm. around Fayetteville this summer. I really wanted to have them again. I think that opened my world.
Mediterranean.
Thank
food?
You.
Yeah.
Like anything in Pakistan, I was asking them if there's any Pakistan food, and the people that came to the event, they were also telling me where the food are from, which restaurant is from. That was very fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I feel like Indian Indo-Pak food and like Mediterranean food is a little bit underrated, but they taste amazing. So I think they're
very underrated, yeah. I would say.
Glad that we could increase their exposure. We got a lot of good feedback for the food for our events that we did. So I'm glad to hear that.
What about Chinese food? Have you ever had any Chinese food?
Yes. I don't have as often as I'd like to because I have dietary restrictions. I'm Muslim and I have to eat halal meat and whatnot. You can't find a lot of halal Chinese restaurants here. But when you go to Dallas, where like the Muslim community is huge, there's a lot of halal Chinese restaurants there. And so I love having Chinese food there and whatnot.
What's the dietary restriction for Muslims?
The dietary restrictions are that we can't eat pork. But then aside from that, for some Muslims, the meat that they eat has to be slaughtered a specific way. And so if the meat is slaughtered a specific way, it is called halal, which means permissible in Arabic. And so if the meat is slaughtered that specific way, then we're allowed to eat that. So recently, actually, Tyson in Bentonville and Fayetteville started using halal meat and whatnot. And so now all like the Chick-fil-A's and Cane's in the areas are now halal. And so I used to never like have them before, but now I can go ahead and try them if I want to now.
What are you, do you like them?
I actually haven't tried them yet. And
okay.
So I think I'm going to go to.
Let me know.
Yeah, because my friends, they love that kind of stuff. So once they heard that like Tyson is now using halal chicken for the restaurants here, they were so happy. And so they've already like had it and they're like, it tastes awesome.
I'm glad. I'm glad.
And so I don't eat out too much, but I'll probably try it sometime soon.
What's the point of halal?
Hmm?
What's the point of halal? Why? What do you think is the significance of halal?
Significance of halal is, well, first of all, it's just what God commanded. And so as a Muslim, it means one who submits to God. And so whatever God commanded is what we obey. But aside from that, halal is a bit more of a humane slaughter. So the ruling behind halal is that whenever you kill the animal, you first have to lay it down. You have to give it water before you slaughter it. You have to point its head in a specific direction. We pray towards Mecca. So whenever we slaughter the animal, we also slaughter it towards Mecca. And then you have to slaughter the neck in a clean, like, swift slice so it doesn't feel much pain. And then you let the blood flow out as well. So we don't like any blood in our meat and whatnot. So in that sense, it's also a lot cleaner and whatnot. But that is essentially, like, what the halal meat slaughter looks like.
Why do you kill it in that direction?
Hmm?
Why do you kill it in that direction?
We kill in that direction because essentially it's just what God commanded. It's our way to slaughter it in an Islamic way. And so same reason that we prayed towards Mecca, because God commanded us, we also slaughter the animals face towards that way whenever we do that as well.
Have you seen that before?
Yeah. So actually one of the Islamic holidays is called Eid. And on that holiday, actually, Muslims, every single family, actually, we go and we sacrifice an animal. And then
one every family.
Yeah, so every family, someone from the household has to slaughter an animal. And then 1/3 of it you share with your community, 1/3 you keep for yourself, and 1/3 you donate to the poor. And so actually, like, every single year I've seen this happen and whatnot. And so this year it actually be my turn to slaughter.
What do you think about that?
What do I think about that?
How do you feel about slaughtering? How would this change your understanding of slaughtering?
I've been thinking about that, right? Because I personally think I really like this practice because it's a very charitable act, how you donate it to the community and whatnot, and how you donate it to the poor and needy and whatnot. But slaughtering myself is something I have never done. Like, I've never, like, I guess, killed an animal before. But in, I hope this doesn't come out wrong, I've always, in a sense, just wanted, not wanted to, but I just want an understanding of what that feels like, because I guess we're so desensitized from, like, what we eat, and, like, I guess I eat, like, chicken and meat, like, all the time and whatnot, right? But I've never actually done, like, the slaughtering or, like, the work that goes into it, and so I think that slaughtering it would be, like, a good experience for me, so I can, like, know the process behind, like, where my food comes from and, like, whatnot, because I guess a lot of people, right, like, they enjoy their meat and they love eating what they do and whatnot. But if they were asked to go through the process of obtaining that themselves,
they'd be very disconnected.
Yeah, they'd be very fearful or kind of like shook or whatnot. And so I'm somewhat looking forward to it. I pray that I won't be super like fearful or kind of hesitant or reluctant.
I think for this practice, we know immediately or we know beforehand somehow what are we killing these animals for?
Yeah.
Like, immediately they will go to the community, they'll go to the poor, and they'll go back to ourselves.
Yes.
And we also did this together.
Yeah.
What would happen if there's an emergency that we need to run for our lives to kill something? And what if we are in the wilderness and we need to kill something like something that's dangerous for us, that's harming us, like a snake or something?
Mm-hmm.
How would that process go then? Because I think in that process that you just described to me, it looks like we have a togetherness. Before I killed it, I did the process and it was facing the direction of what it was facing before it came inside me.
Yeah.
I put all the blood out, so it's supposed to be clean.
Mm-hmm.
And before I eat it, before we became together, we're connected, I went through that process.
Mm-hmm.
But what would it be if it's in a wild situation?
So, in Islam, whenever there are unusual circumstances out of necessity, typically, so of course, if a wild animal is attacking me and whatnot, then in that case, rules don't always apply because in wild situations, right, like, your safety is prioritized first. So if you were to defend yourself and animals attacking you, you wouldn't necessarily need to follow, like, the halal slaughter rules, because the halal slaughter rules are for a specific reason, right? You want to slaughter the animals, you can use it for food, either for yourself or your community and whatnot. If a wild animal is attacking me, then I'm slaughtering the animal for my defense and whatnot, right? And so the halal, like, slaughter rule would not apply to that animal. In a similar sense, Muslims, we can't eat pork and whatnot, right? But if there were ever to be a scenario in which I was just hungry, lost in the desert, and the only thing available to me was, like, pork and whatnot,
okay,
it would be totally permissible for me to eat pork.
That's really good.
Yeah, because of course, because God's understanding of circumstance and whatnot, right? And actions are based on intentions. And so I'm not eating this pork because I'm just salivating over it and I wish to do something that God has wanted me to do. I'm eating it because out of necessity. Same scenario, I didn't slaughter the animal running after me because I just wanted to do it against God's commands. I did it because I was trying to protect my life. And so in that case, it'd be unusual circumstances, so the rulings will not apply directly.
Is that very important, the reason or the justification of the reason behind the actions or its intention?
Yes, in fact, that is
a very important
concept
in
Islam? That is one of the cornerstones of our religion. One of the most important sayings of our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam is that actions, all your actions are dependent upon intention. So you won't be judged for anything you do without God taking into account the intention of your act.
What do you mean?
Most bizarre example ever, right? Like, what if I killed someone?
To protect someone.
Sure, but even like a more bizarre example, right? What if I was just like walking? All right, I was walking along the side of the road. I tripped and fell to the side, and my feet slipped, and a rock fell down a cliff and hit someone on the head, and they died. Like, I would not be charged by God for murder and whatnot because there was no intent for me to kill someone there.
How would you do in that circumstance?
Well, I would not be charged by God with the sin of murder, right? Because in that instance, right, because my intention was not to murder, right? My intention was I was just walking alongside of the road and I accidentally slip and hurt someone. So I would not be judged based on that. So everything you do is based on your intentions.
But because of that, the fear of result was also very significantly talked about, right?
One more time?
Because of that, the fear of resulting of what the actions are were also, I guess, very significantly seen because mm-hmm. of the intentions. I wouldn't think of what the result would be if I don't care about the intentions. It's like the contrast between them.
Yeah. We were talking about, I was explaining the rulings of halal slaughter to you and what permissibility and intention, how all that ties in together and whatnot.
I was saying I'm also care about the process. I feel like mm-hmm. it's like the moment, the second where I think about intentions more, the second it'll make me think more about consequences too.
It would make you think more about what?
Consequences. It's like as long as I thought about the first side of the thing, I'll look at the other side more as well.
I see. That is also a good point.
Yeah. How would you, like, what would you do? Like, what would your family do daily as a practice of your religion together? What would you guys do?
What do we do as a daily practices?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in Islam, there are 5 daily prayers prescribed. And so every single day we pray 5 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's see, so far I've already prayed 2 of them. One of them was in the morning. It's before sunrise. And so I really like that prayer because it helps me get up early in the morning and kind of start the day off in like a mindful, reflective state and whatnot. And then the next one is around noon, midday. And so I prayed that one shortly before coming over here. And now the next prayer I need to complete before sunrise. And so prayer,
what about the other two?
Then one happens after sunrise, and then one happens after sundown. Mm. And so all the Islamic prayers are based on like the movement of the sun throughout the day.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Would you be asleep by then?
No, the sundown prayer is essentially just when the light from the sun disappears. So I think that's around like 9:40-ish nowadays and whatnot. So I typically pray that prayer and then I sleep around like 11 o'clock or whatnot. So it's not very difficult for me.
When was the first prayer in the morning?
The first prayer in the morning was around, it starts at dawn. Dawn is when the light of the sun first peaks over the horizon and then it ends at sunrise. And so these prayers aren't prayers you pray at a specific time every single day. It's more so like there is a window you can pray the prayer in before the next prayer starts.
That's good.
Yeah. And so I think dawn was around like 5 a.m. today and sunrise was around like 6:10. So you have like an hour and 10-minute window to pray and whatnot. I think I prayed around like 5:40 or something. And so, yeah.
That's really early. What does the sun means to you in Islam?
The sun? What does the sun mean to me in Islam? I wouldn't say it has a super spiritual significance in our religion.
What do you mean?
I mean, to me, I just see the sun as something that provides energy to our planet and energy to our food and life and whatnot. In our religion, it's we use it to mark the time of the day as the time passes and whatnot. But aside from that, I don't necessarily ponder on the greater significance of the sun too much, I guess.
What do you think? What are the other really significant stuff, like things, mm-hmm. or I guess, like ideas in your religion?
What are some other significant ideas in our religion?
Or things, I guess, mm-hmm. like representations.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's see. What are some things I really like about my religion? One thing I really like about religion is the emphasis of family and community we have in our religion. Muslim family in Islam is so heavily emphasized. It's very highly encouraged. And being a filial son, taking care of the elders and whatnot, and being courteous to children and being kind and caring is a very valued thing within our community. And even when we pray together as a community.
What's the difference of the roles of men and women?
So in Islam, what are the differences between men and women?
What are the roles? Like, what is the difference in their roles?
Difference in their roles?
Mm-hmm. Or their characters. So mm-hmm. we will see men in this way and women in the other way.
Yeah.
Is it mixed or is it different?
So, they're going to be a little bit different. And so in Islam, men and women, whenever we pray separately. And so typically men will lead the prayer and then women might follow. And then also in Islam, we have different covering. So men, we must cover from the navel to past the knees. And whereas women also cover their head as well. And then, so I guess there are different like practices we do and whatnot. But then spiritually, we're seen as equal in the eyes of God. But I guess we do have like different roles. Like in Islam, like it's, even though like, I guess we might believe in more traditional roles. Like even though like, even though in Islam, like it's, anyone can work, anyone can do that. It is the man's responsibility first and foremost to provide for the family. And then if the wife wishes to work and whatnot, she totally can. But if neither is willing to work, it is the responsibility of the man to provide for the family and whatnot. So in that sense, there are primary roles given to both, even though the roles can intertwine. Also in that sense, the primary role of the mother is to take care of the kids. And of course, the man can as well, but it should be the primary role of the mother to do that as well. So I guess in Islam, in that sense, we do have slightly like traditional roles.
What do you think the difference is between that and American household?
I'd say it's still somewhat similar, but of course, I think after the Industrial Revolution and whatnot, and then probably after even advancements in like just technology and whatnot. So now I guess, let's see. I guess the difference in a typical American society is that where I guess we're more perhaps modernized, advanced in the sense that I guess many of like the traditional things that kept a woman busy is not keeping them as busy anymore, I guess. So things like raising the children can now go ahead to daycare and whatnot, and now more women are entering the workforce and whatnot. And so even though we typically, I guess, still do have some notions that like, oh, typically it's your mom who like takes care of you the most and whatnot, and it's your dad who works, I guess in American society, it's slightly shifting a little bit more.
Do you see the actions of taking care a lot? Do you see a lot of like care in a lot of, in like, oh, do you see a lot of care
mm-hmm.
in your family?
100%. Yeah, okay. A lot of care, and a lot of care in my family. In fact, I think my family is especially caring, and we get that from two specific ways. One, as I described in our Islamic culture, where family and making sure that every member of the family is fulfilling their own duties is extremely important.
So what do you mean by that?
Like, I have a duty to be kind and caring. I have a duty to be obedient to my mother and my father, and to be righteous with my younger siblings, not torment them too much.
Is that the same for your younger siblings?
Yes, younger siblings as well. And then a husband should be kind, and husband should be protectful and providing for his family. A wife should also be protectful and caring for their family, and there should be mutual respect between everyone else. Everyone should be fulfilling their roles piously and whatnot. And so I think that's a lot of where my family caringness comes from. Then also in our Indian culture, I think a lot of caring comes from that as well. Because in Indian culture, it's heavily emphasized that family sticks together for as long as they possibly can. So that's one of the reasons why I'm still living with my parents, even though I got a full scholarship to the University of Arkansas. So if I wanted to, I could just room on campus and everything would be paid for and whatnot. My meals would be paid for, housing would be paid for. But because family is so important, we want to stick together as long as possible. And so even while I'm attending school, I still stay at home with my parents, and it's still seen as something very honorable. I guess in American society, it may be not always the case, but sometimes seen as kind of like maybe funny or maybe like a little bit embarrassing to be still with your parents after a certain age and whatnot. Mm. Whereas in Indian family, it's seen as something that you should really try to do, and it's really encouraged and whatnot. And so even like I remember watching some interviews and like which like Indian actresses, like they came on like American like TV show hosts, and they were always questioned like, so you still live with your parents even though you're like 25 years old now, right? And then they explained that it's not seen as like a negative stigma in Indian society, because they don't see it as
it's a
like
good thing.
Yeah, they don't necessarily see it as, oh, I'm just kind of like smooching off my parents, you know, just living in the basement and whatnot. It's more so as like, you've taken care of me for 20 years of my life, so I will continue taking care of you as well.
What do you think family is to you? How would you describe your family to others?
Let's see, family, I feel like family is like the essential unit that like stabilizes everything, that stabilizes society. Because I feel like just the closest connections and you have for and that you can take care of is your family. There's like a special bond between family that you don't find as much among friends and whatnot, like, or even like your community members or anything. So like an example, like my little brother, right? Like I will fight with him more than I will ever will with any of my friends and whatnot. But between like me and my little brother, there's just like this like just deep like implicit love that like I would choose him over any of my friends if I had to and whatnot. So I feel like family is just like the smallest like unit of strong community that you can get. And if everyone has a good family and cares for their family, and then if everyone does the same, essentially, then all society is taken care of, I feel like. So if you can just foster those close ties and take care of the people closest to you, then I think society would be much better as a whole.
How would you describe your family to others, to someone you just met?
Let's see, my family, I love my family. My family, we're a bit of a rowdy bunch, because I've three siblings. And so me and my siblings, we're all very unique in our own ways, I guess. Another thing about Indian families, maybe just my Indian family, like we grew up like fighting a lot, and like physical hitting each other is like not seen as a huge taboo. So me and my siblings would physically fight all the time. And so we grew up like being super competitive, but then also like super supportive of each other and whatnot. And so we grew up fighting a lot, but now that we're all older, we really get along and whatnot. My parents are also great. Generally, I think my entire family gets along really, really well. And then all six of us still live in the same household, so I see them all the time. We're super close.
Oh, yeah. Six of you? You have three other siblings, right?
Three siblings, two parents, yes.
Yeah. How do you treat people outside of your family and outside of your religion?
Mm-hmm.
What would you do if you see someone who's not getting along with your family and mm-hmm. you know that this person is outside of your family? I guess, what would you do in that situation?
Yeah, well, I would say that I try to treat everyone the exact same. So, in fact, I slightly shame to say it, but like, I feel like sometimes I generally try to be the best I possibly can to family and to strangers, but sometimes you treat like strangers and friends better than you do to your family, right? Like you can like, you know, just act angry at your mother and whatnot and like be quiet to her, and you can like fight with your siblings and whatnot. But typically you don't want to do that with like your teacher or like your friends or whatnot, right? And so I try to maintain that same standard, which is why I try to be the best as possible I can to my family and whatnot. But I guess you asked the question, like if I saw someone like acting like badly with my family or whatnot, I just try to reconcile between them. I would not try to start a fire or make a bigger scene than already was. I would just, if someone was being rude to them, I would just kind of like, you know, stand in front of them. I'd, you know, tell them to scoot a little bit back and try to reason with them. Hey, why are you upset? Did my family or did my sibling or friend do anything to you? If not, then what's the issue? Then I try to resolve it peacefully. I wouldn't say that I'm one to get angry very easily or, you know, super emotional if something like that happened. I try to be calm and resolve it.
How do you reconcile inside your family?
This is actually a good question because, okay, I gotta say, I think I'm like the most level-headed in my family. Like,
what do you mean?
Huh?
What do you mean?
In the sense that my sister, my older sister, and my older brother, they sometimes fight and don't get along. My little brother, my older brother, they sometimes fight and don't get along. My little brother argues with my mom sometimes, and so, but I feel like I'm the one who like has a pretty good relationship with all of them and whatnot. So whenever anybody has a fight, it's kind of always up to me to kind of go in between them and like sit them both down. And it's kind of be like, hey, y'all, like, we're family. Like, it's not, you know, it's not that deep. Someone might have hurt your feelings or whatnot here, but let's just be nice. And, you know, I tell my little brother, hey, like, you can't yell at mom at all. She's like your mother. Like, it goes back to our religious values. Just like yelling at your mother is unheard of. Like, you cannot do that, whatnot. And I tell him that, look, even if she might be somewhat unreasonable to you and, like, might be, you know, being unfair to you, just, you know, learn to be the bigger person and just move on and whatnot. So.
Is that important? Is reconciliation important in a family?
Yeah, 100%. If you don't reconcile between family members, then things fall apart. So you have to constantly reaffirm and make sure that everyone in your family is doing well and feeling good and whatnot.
Do you have to reconcile? Where does a reconcile come from? What if, can people work things out by themselves?
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, so I guess reconciliation does not always require intercession on my part. So if people can reconcile by themselves, that's great. But I'm really proactive. So if I ever see that someone's having a fight or my sister might be feeling upset because of a conversation that she had with my mom, I'll go up to her and I'll be like, hey, Baji, what's wrong? You know, like, why are you upset? And so I like to facilitate reconciliation, I guess. But of course, people can always do it themselves. And in cases, it does happen by themselves. But if I can help, I like helping because I like my family's happy. And so I'll do my part.
In the future, how would you see yourself as a lead of the family?
Let's see, how would I see myself as a lead of the family? Well, that's a very, very, very futuristic question. Let's see.
But I said in the future.
That's true. I'm not sure. I just, whenever it happens, I just want to make sure that I'm always the best person I can possibly be and always as selfless as I can possibly be.
Would that come to an end? Would it be an end where you are the better person? Like, or would it be a time where you already is the best person?
I would say that I would say that I'm someone who's a bit self-sacrificial in the sense that I'm always willing to just take the blame or put the burden upon myself if other people can feel better. And I feel totally fine with that. Like, I'm always happy if I can just take the brunt of the blame or the work upon myself and make other people better because I genuinely don't get upset very easily and whatnot.
Would there be a lot of blame? Would there be a lot of expectation of the blame?
No. I don't foresee my family being anything dramatic or super hard to handle in the future.
But your own family.
Hmm?
Your own family.
My own family. Yes. No, in my own family, no. No, there's not.
But no, I meant your future family.
No, yeah. I mean, even my future family, I hopefully I don't foresee a lot of struggle and blame and whatnot in the future. But whenever there is a situation in which I guess two parties are fighting or whatnot or having an issue, there should always be one person who's willing to just take the higher road and just start the reconciliation process, right? Who's willing to overcome his arrogance and be like, okay, I'm sorry, I was wrong. So I hope that I can swallow up my pride and be the person who's always willing to take that first step because I want to fix things as soon as possible and whatnot.
Do you have some pride? Are you excited to start your own family?
Yeah, I would say so. Starting a family, I guess just growing up, going through life has always been something that's been very appealing to me. And so, yeah, I would be excited to have a family in the future and whatnot.
What does starting a new family means in Indian culture?
Starting a new family in Indian culture? Well, it's, let's see. one of the things I feel like that people always long for in life are just like deep and meaningful connections. And I think that the most meaningful connections one can find through life are typically like their own family, having a like spouse in which you tell everything, you confide with them, they become inseparable from you, and then having like your own children who will unconditionally just love you, and then you will unconditionally like love them, and you're willing to sacrifice yourself for them. Like these kind of extremely like strong bonds, I feel like human like connection is so important to us. And I think the human connection and just love you can find within a family is just almost irreplaceable and can't be found easily elsewhere. Even though I do believe in the value of friends, and I love my friends, and I have a few good friends who I've known for a very long time and trust them with everything. But just the ties of family that you get, you can't find them anywhere else that much.
What do you think the intention of starting a new family is? And what do you think the intention is with making friends?
I would say the intention of starting a new family, that's a deep question. Yeah, of course it all starts with love. I would definitely say that that's a good starting point. I would also perhaps tie it religiously, though, because starting a family is just seen as one of like the most virtuous and most beautiful acts from God and whatnot. I would also tie it into that as well. And I guess verse with friends, I mean, I would also say that I start friendful relationships out of like a love and care for them and whatnot, but also out of like a wantingness to be better. I would say like all the friends I have, they're people who genuinely like motivate me to be like the best version of myself and whatnot.
What do you see? What do you see those intentions is in American culture?
I think the intentions of starting a family or the intentions of making friends are kind of be very similar and all cultures for the most part, because it's almost a universal thing. It's not anything that's inherently unique to any of these cultures. I would say they're very similarly grounded. I guess I just might separate away the religious aspect a little bit, because I guess America as a whole might be slightly religious, still a little bit so and whatnot. But aside from that, I'd say it's pretty similar.
How much is your family in proportion of educating you and building you as a person, with school?
That's a good question. So
this
building me as a building like my character, I would say like 90% my family. Like, yeah,
that's impossible.
I feel very, very heavily like so much built when it comes to my character. I would say most of it has been fostered by my family. They're the ones who've taught me my morals, and just growing up with my siblings, kind of batting headaches against them, has developed me into like the kind of personality I am and whatnot. Yeah, so when it comes to my character and whatnot, I would say that it's 90% my family. I've always had like a lot of friends and whatnot who've tried to like, lure me away, or maybe I wouldn't call them friends in this sense, because my family has been a little bit strict and whatnot. I'd say Indian culture in general is a little bit more strict. Like, they're like, you can't go out this late, you can't do this, you can't do that and whatnot.
In social concepts?
Yeah, social concepts especially. And so a lot of my friends have always been like, oh, your like parents are like so mean and harsh, like, oh, they're horrible. But I've always been like, hey, look, you can't like call my parents like that, okay? Not even I do that. So I get that, you feel bad for me that I can't come with you like to this party or something, right? But don't bash my parents like that. That's something that's just not allowed in my religion or my culture.
Okay.
And so I would say that when it comes to like me as a person, my values, my character, it's mostly been my family. Yeah.
Do you think it'll be the same for people in India? Will most of their characters be built by their family as well?
I would assume the same, yeah. Because like I said, you live with your family such a long time, and just being connected to, and I guess also the obedience aspect. I guess you can tell from me, I would say I'm a very obedient kid to my parents and whatnot. And then I really dislike it if anyone else, makes fun of my parents or is like, oh, they're too strict. And I also dislike it when I see other kids just like talking back to their parents or being
unacceptable in any culture.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that's unacceptable in any culture.
It is unacceptable in any culture, but I feel like it's especially unacceptable in Indian culture because there's consequences for that and whatnot.
What do you mean?
So it's just, you'll get in like huge trouble if you even like you can't even argue to some extent Indian culture. You'll get in big trouble for that. And also in Indian culture, like, you know, your parents, like, you know, will hit you over the head or slap you or stuff like that. Whereas I feel like it's less common in American culture for parents to hit their children and whatnot.
Will you be okay with your children are not allowed to argue with you?
Hmm?
Will you be okay with your children not supposed to be arguing with you?
I guess argue is a bad word. So I guess to some extent, one way that I could expand on that I feel like my parents perhaps didn't is I would let in almost intelligent or some way exchange of ideas between my children and me. Like, I would not knock them down at all for arguing with me and whatnot. But, like, here's the thing. Like, I'm someone who's, like, extremely friendly and whatnot. But I feel like I also recognize the importance of that with your children. There's many different relationships you can have with your children. I think the first relationship you'd always have is I will be the children's father, and then second, their friend. And so I do want to be really, really friendly with them and, like, let them do whatever they want and just, like, you know, be, like, super, like, chill with me and whatnot. But the primary relationship we should have is a father and son and father and daughter. And with that, there should be, like, a respect that they should have for me and whatnot.
I thought the first role would be a caretaker. Mm-hmm. Or I thought the first role would be a caretaker.
Yeah,
like
sure.
A protector.
Yeah, I mean, I said the first role should be father and son, but with father comes my
that's
duty as
meant.
The protector and caretaker. So yeah, that's implied, of course.
What's your biggest struggle with the American culture and the Indian culture?
What is my biggest struggle with American culture and Indian culture?
Like, maybe it might be sometime where it'll be falling through, or mm-hmm. sometime you'll be struggling. If I belong this, what do I? Do I struggle? Do I?
Mm-hmm.
How do I come back to this? What was your biggest? I guess.
Yeah, sure. It's not a super, I guess, like, deep answer, but I guess the biggest struggle I've had is with. I guess I'm so much more well versed with. So I guess most of my values come from my parents, who have typically raised me like an Indian culture fashion. But I think that a lot of my personality and a lot of my humor and language has all come from American culture. And so to that extent, a lot of, like, multicultural kids have the struggle in which they start to lose, like, their native language. I haven't necessarily lost it yet, but I definitely am getting a little bit sloppy in it and whatnot. And so it kind of, like, it hurts and kind of feels really bad, or you can't talk to your grandparents that well anymore, or, you know, you feel embarrassed that you're speaking, like, broken Hindi to your grandparents. And even though they're not going to judge you for it because they love you so much, grandparents love their grandchildren unconditionally almost. But there's almost, like, a little bit of, like, guilt you feel. And like, I do want to work on that and make sure, like, I, you know, I at least do that for my parents, so that, like, it would just be awful in the future if, you know, I were just to, you know, have my own family and just lose the language and become so just, you know, desensitized that, you know, when I see my parents every now and then, it becomes more difficult and more difficult for me to speak with them. That would be really kind of, like, shameful and embarrassing for me if that were to happen. So I guess retaining my language in America is one thing I definitely want to work on more, so I don't lose myself in the future.
What do you think? Will you think you'll be the same if you were born in India? If you were born in India, and are you usually looking forward to someday visiting India or go to India? And mm-hmm. I know that it seems like, do you feel like you're always making a choice between the Indian culture and the American culture? Because from what I heard from you is mm-hmm. that the families are constantly choosing together. We're constantly,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're reconciling, we're loving each other, even though we fight a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We fight more than families, but we, at the end, we are back in a family. It sounds like the families are constantly making choices with each other,
mm-hmm.
choices of choosing our family. So there are already, like, a lot of choice choosing inside a family. Do you feel like
sure.
you also need to make that choice when you step out of the family in the society, that you always constantly feel like you need to make a choice?
No, I would not say so.
That's good.
I would not really say that. I don't have a super, like, besides, like, perhaps a language problem I mentioned to you, I would not say there's a huge, like, cultural clash between me wanting to preserve my Indian values here and having to pick between, you know, like, you know, American versus Indian cultural values and whatnot. Because largely, I guess, in America, like, I feel like it's accepted that if I want to, if I want to be super like close-knit with my family in the future and whatnot, and if I'm going to live with my family and whatnot, I guess some people might ask me like awkward questions like, hey, you still live with your parents and whatnot. But typically once I explain myself to them and I'm like, yeah, it's for this reason, that reason, we're super close, most people are totally accepting. They're not going to judge. And in fact, a lot of people have like a respect whenever I tell them that. And so I've never really found it really difficult to kind of like balance out my identity, because if you explain yourself to most people, they're extremely understanding. And of course they get it. At first, they see you as an outsider. But once you explain yourself, everyone's typically pretty accepting here.
Do you ever feel that this feeling has to come to you where like, I am proud to be an Asian American? Do you feel that way?
I guess, I don't know. I guess my race isn't like something I've like think about too much. I guess I more so think about my values and whatnot. And so I think of my values of like, I guess how we discussed today, like family, religion, and culture. And so I feel like all of those things I'm inherently very, very proud of. And if they come from my Indian culture, my Muslim background, then of course it's very easy for me to be proud of those.
What's your top three favorite things about your culture? What's your favorite? What's your second favorite? And what's your third favorite?
Favorite things about my culture? I would put family, friends, and community. There's just a certain
Huh? That's family, friends, community, right?
Okay, all right, fine. Can we not just make that one?
Okay. I just let you make that into one thing.
Okay.
In front of me.
Okay.
That could be one. That's
sure,
okay.
We'll encompass it together as a sense of togetherness among the people.
That's good.
As one.
Good job.
Number two, I would say, there's a very big focus on hard work and obedience in my culture, which I really like. I feel like my parents, very, very hardworking. They also instilled with me a very, very hardworking ethic and whatnot. And I feel like a lot of parents I know, Indian parents, they share similar attitudes. And I really like that my parents instilled that within me, because I've grown up to be a better person, I think, in that sense. I'm pretty happy with how I've ended up and whatnot. So I would put that at number two. Number three. It's a boring answer, but I have to say probably just the food.
Okay.
I really enjoy Indian food. Indian food is actually, my mom, I think I told you this separately one time. My mom, she only makes Indian food.
You did tell me that.
Yeah, so she does not make like any American food or whatnot at all. And so, but it's awesome. I have it all the time and I've grown really accustomed to it. And so whenever I go to people's house who make Indian food, it just reminds me of home and whatnot. And so I really
enjoy it. So you don't have much American food. I'm excited to hear what you think about the Kenny's chicken and stuff.
Oh yeah. No, I'm really excited to start trying more food and whatnot, of course.
Good. Thank you for meeting with me. I really appreciate you. I think
thank
we had
so
a good
much.
Time.
I did too. Thank you so much, Fawn.
Thank you. Good job, Abdullah.
Yay.
Listening Lab on KUAF 91.3.